ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 2 चैप्टर 9 टाइटल्ड आंसर्स बाय साइटिंग द लॉर्ड्स वर्जन टेक्स्ट्स 26 एंड 27। 26 इज अप ऑन द बोर्ड। तथापि नाथ मानस्य नाथ नाथय नाहितम् परावरे यथारूपे जानीयां ते त्वरूपिणः। तथा अपि इन स्पाइट ऑफ दैट नाथ मानस्य ऑफ द वन हु इज आस्किंग फॉर नाथ ओ लॉर्ड नाथय प्लीज अवार्ड नाथितम एज इट इज डिजायर्ड पर अवरे इन द मैटर ऑफ mundane and transcendental yatha as it is rupe in the form janiyam may it be known te your tu but arupinah one who is formless। Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In spite of that, my Lord, I am praying to you to kindly fulfill my desire. May I please be informed how, in spite of your transcendental form, you assume the mundane form, although you have no such form at all. There's no purport here, so we go to the next verse, which I will chant by myself, since it's not up on the board. यथात्म माया योगेन नाना शक्ति उपभ्रमितं विलुम्पन् विसृजन् गृहणन् बिभ्रत् आत्मानमात्मना। ट्रांसलेशन एंड प्लीज इन्फॉर्म मी हाउ यू बाय योर ओन सेल्फ मैनिफेस्ट डिफरेंट एनर्जीज फॉर एनिहिलेशन जेनरेशन एक्सेप्टेंस and maintenance by combination and permutation. Purport. The whole manifestation of the Lord, the whole manifestation is the Lord Himself by diffusion of His different energies only, namely the internal, external and marginal, just as the sunlight is a manifestation of the energy of the sun planet. Such energy is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, just as the sunshine is simultaneously one with and different from the sun planet. The energies are acting by combination and permutation by the indication of the Lord, and the acting agents like Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva are also different incarnations of the Lord. In other words, there is nothing but the Lord. And still the Lord is different from all such manifestive activities. How it is so will be explained later on. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Kurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sachivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna. Lord Brahma is glorifying the Supreme Lord. Now that the Lord has appeared before him, and in the previous verse, he has already glorified the Lord as one who has unhindered, complete and perfect intelligence and knowledge. And now he wishes to see or understand how the Lord manifests within this world. Even though he is always in the transcendental realm, but sometimes he manifests himself within this material world. So Brahma wants to know how that happens. And he would like to know how the Supreme Lord manifests his different energies within this world and also beyond, because the Lord has innumerable energies and they all combine in different ways to fulfill the Lord's desires. So in verse number 26, Brahma wishes to see how the Lord manifests his pastimes, or rather his form, from the spiritual world into the material world. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Ajopi sanna vyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swamatishthaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. He says, Ajah api avyayatma. Even though I have an imperishable, transcendental, spiritual body, and I am the Lord of all living entities, Bhutanam Ishvaropi San, nevertheless, I appear in this material world. And when I do appear, I appear with my very same spiritual form. I do not assume a material form. I come in the self-same spiritual form, which is my original form in the spiritual world. This is Krishna's transcendental nature. Krishna is the original supreme spiritual, supreme personality of Godhead. He is Satchidananda Vigraha. Vigraha means form. He has a spiritual form, a form of eternity, knowledge and bliss. And when Krishna manifests in this world, he comes in that Satchidananda Vigraha. Sometimes it is thought that he has a mundane form because he manifests within this material world. But that is not so. In fact, the conception that Krishna originally has no form, but he manifests himself within this world in a form that is material, is precisely the Mayavad philosophy. The very term Mayavad, Vad means philosophy or thinking or argument. Maya, as you know, is illusion or illusory potency. So that philosophy which proclaims that the Supreme Lord is originally impersonal, formless, without characteristics, without qualities and attributes, but when that supreme formless truth manifests within the material world, assumes a form, and that form is material or made of Maya. So this idea is called Mayavad. Generally, devotees sometimes use the word Mayavad to indicate somebody who is in Maya. So one time I remember some devotees saying, you know, this person is a Mayavadi. I said, really? Because a Mayavadi is one who, you know, he has to be very philosophical, he has to understand so many things. Even though their conclusion is wrong, but they have to be deeply philosophical and scholarly to understand. So he meant it in the sense that he enjoys a lot of sense gratification because he drinks and he gambles and he's very materialistic. So it was in that sense they indicated the word Mayavad because they thought Mayavadi means a man who is in Maya. But that's not what it means. But Mayavadi really means one who thinks like this, who thinks that the Lord originally does not have a form. He is formless. He is just abstract, divine light spread everywhere. And that one supreme light, Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi, manifests here in this world in a material form. And actually we are that one supreme. That one supreme has also appeared within this world as every one of us. So we are also the supreme. And we have a body that is made of Maya. Even that one supreme, when he comes as an avatar, an incarnation like Krishna or Ram, even their body is made of Maya, as our body is also made of Maya. That is their understanding. So therefore they think Krishna's body, Lord Ramachandra's body, is also material, like our body is material. So this is the understanding. However, from the Vedic scriptures, particularly like the Bhagavad Puran, the Bhagavad Gita and so on, from the devotional scriptures, we can understand very clearly that the Lord actually has a form. He is a transcendental person with a spiritual form, with attributes and so on. When you say that he is the Supreme Lord, then immediately he has attributes, he has qualities. He cannot be without qualities. Originally, of course, the Lord stays in the Goloka Vrindavan planet, residing there with his devotees performing transcendental pastimes. And when he descends here, he comes as he is. Krishna is forever transcendental to the modes of material nature. Krishna is never in touch with material energy, even though he is the source of the material energy, even though he is always in control of the material energy. But he remains forever the transcendent Lord with his spiritual form. Last time I remember, perhaps in my last visit to Melbourne, we had a little exercise about an interactive exercise in the class about why we should think that God has a form. We had a mock debate, am I right? Between the believers of the idea or the philosophy that God has no form. What are the different arguments that people put forward to say that God has no form? Anyone, let's have a mock debate today. Because you cannot see him? Well, we cannot see Tony Abbott right now also. But someone may say, well, somebody is... But that form is not the real form. There is something there. You can't see him. Even in the spiritual world, we can't see Krishna. It's only when Krishna manifests here that we are able to see him. So what are the philosophical arguments that people give? Yes.
When someone is so unlimitedly vast, how can he be confined into a
form?
Yeah.
No, how can we confine to a form? So one argument that is given is that the Lord by definition, God by definition has to be unlimited in every respect. So if he's unlimited, how can he have a form? Because to have a form means you limit him. Like we have a form, so we are limited. So the idea is that form means a limit. When you give somebody a form, you limit him. So therefore they say, because God is unlimited, therefore he cannot have a form, because to have a form means you are limiting him. And that's a contradiction. Do you get the argument? Okay, now who is that brave devotee who will counter this argument? You meet a Mayavadi who is going to speak this idea, yes. No, but that's a psychological argument, not a philosophical argument. How will you philosophically counter this point? Yes.
If we are the human being, if we have a form, and if God does not have a form, then what
is? Okay, we are human beings, we have a form. If God doesn't have a form, what kind of God is he? We need to clarify that point a little more. God was created or man was created?
Man was created from his own creatures, only his impression. So the God must have some form by which
Okay, so you're saying that because it is said in the scripture, man was created in the image of God, so therefore God must have a form. But you see, what if I don't accept that scripture? That's just your book that says it. But I don't believe your book. So, yes.
That's why we can see in this whole cosmic creation, so much intelligence is being used. Intelligence is being pursued by somebody who has intelligence.
Okay, in this cosmic world, we see there's so much intelligence. There is so much intelligence behind everything, so there must be a person. But that's precisely the point they say, that supreme intelligence is formless. It doesn't have to be a form. Yes.
Perhaps the example that, you know, if you gave somebody some gold and you turn that person and says, oh, where did you get that from? And you say, oh, that gold mine over there. But there's no more gold in it. You can use the example that you can't get gold from a mine that has no gold in it. You have to have a gold mine in order to extract the gold. So therefore, in order to have a personality or form, it has to come from personality or form. So you can't have a form coming from a form.
Okay, so your argument is that we're heading in the right direction. Your argument is that you can't have gold coming from a mine that doesn't have gold. So in other words, if something exists here, it must exist there as well. Right? If there's form here, there must be form there. But I could also counter that by saying the air is formless, so therefore God must be formless. There's formlessness here. Yes? So how would you counter that? Yes, this specific question. This is a good argument. The argument is, that God is a source of everything. We have form, we are coming from God. Therefore God must have form. But then we see that God, there's also formlessness in this world, the air is formless. So I can argue God is formless. Yes, that's the answer. So God is both. He has a form and He also has a formless aspect. So the first argument is that since the Lord, we define the absolute truth as He from whom everything emanates. That is the fundamental definition. If anybody asks you, who is God? You say, Krishna is God. Yes. But the what is God? What is the definition of God? So if we say God or absolute truth is He who is a source of everything. Fundamental definition. Janmadyasya yataha. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam's definition. So if God is the absolute truth is a source of everything, then He must have within Himself everything that we see within our experience and also beyond our experience. Am I right? Otherwise, how can He be the source? So we see form in this world. So therefore, He must also have form. But then we see formlessness in this world. So He must also have formlessness. So how can He have both simultaneously? How can He have a form and formlessness simultaneously? Is that possible? Yes? So because He is complete and perfect, therefore He has form and formlessness simultaneously. Can you give an example? The sun planet and the sunshine. So the sun has a form and sunshine has no form. So the sunshine is a formless aspect of the sun. The sun is a globe. We can clearly see it in a circular shape, roughly. Sunshine doesn't have any form. It's all pervasive. It's everywhere. But the sun is not everywhere. Physically, as a globe, it's in one place. But through the medium of its sunshine, its energy, it spreads everywhere. So is the sunshine the same as the sun? No, it is. And at the same time, it isn't. Achintya bheda bheda, simultaneously one and different. So because the sunshine comes from the sun and exists simultaneously with it, qualitatively it is one with the sun. In fact, there is no meaning to the sun without sunshine. And sunshine cannot exist without the sun. So the two exist simultaneously and they are one in quality. But nevertheless, there's a difference also. The globe has a form, the sunshine doesn't have form. The globe is in one place, but the sunshine is everywhere. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ultimately a person. And there is sunshine, there is this transcendental effulgence. The shining effulgence from His body is what is the impersonal, what is called the impersonal aspect, the Brahma Jyoti or the Brahman, which dazzles the minds of the Jnana Yogis who seek after that impersonal aspect. So why is it that we say that the formless comes from the form? Why can I not argue the reverse, that form comes from formless? Even if God has a spiritual form, but that spiritual form is coming from the impersonal light. Suppose I argue like that. Then how would you counter it? Do you get the question? We are saying that the Lord is a person, and from Him comes the light, and that light is the impersonal. But if I say the impersonal is the original, and from the impersonal comes the form, the person, how would you counter that? Yes.
From form can come form and formlessness. An example given of like from body comes from humans the many other bodies they create and at the same time create many ways which is formless.
And so your argument is that form can create form as well as formlessness. Okay, but
formlessness cannot create a form.
Yes. So which of the two is superior? Form is superior to formlessness. Why? Because form can generate form as well as formlessness. Form is a source of the formlessness as we see in the sun and the sunshine. Had the sunshine been the source of the sun, then we could have said that, yes, but we don't see that. So because the form is the source of the formlessness, that is superior. The personality is superior to the impersonality. Let's say now we see, let's say in Melbourne, everything seems to be working nicely. The traffic signals are working, the laws are in place, everything's very nicely organized. So we say the government is doing a good job. Of course, you may have different opinions about it. I don't want to get into the political field. But nevertheless, we say the government is doing a good job. Now, what do we mean by this word government? It is such an impersonal term. What does it mean? Is government some kind of vague, hazy, some something formless thing that is doing something by miracle? Behind the term government, there are individuals. There are people. So there is personality behind that impersonal facade, that impersonal exterior. Behind that lies individuals, persons with brains and ability who handle things, who manage things. So similarly, the jnana yogis who are fascinated by that impersonal light, that dazzling light, and they are attracted to worship that light, they cannot see beyond that light. They cannot understand that beyond that light is the form, that there is a person who is a source of that light. They can't see that. But the devotees can well understand. So in the Ishopanishad, there is a verse where the devotee prays, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapihitam Mukham Tattam Pushrana Pavrano Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye. It means, the devotee is praying to the Lord, O Lord, please remove this dazzling effulgence, this light that is covering your form, and let me see your beautiful face. Imagine when you're driving and there's someone who's shining his headlights, his car's headlights, right into your eyes, and you can't see anything. So there's obviously a car, there's a person behind, but you can't see him because there's so much dazzling light. You know, blindness can be caused by two situations. Sometimes you can't see something, even though your eyes are good, but you can't see something because of two reasons. What are the two reasons? When there's no light, if it's pitch dark, you can't see anything, or there's too much light. So even when there's too much light, you can't see. So those who are in ignorance, completely materialistic, they can't understand God because of darkness. The darkness of ignorance. And those who are Mayavadis, they also cannot understand the form of the Lord because of too much light. Not that they have too much knowledge, that's not what we mean. But too much shining, literally the shining light of the Brahma Jyoti or the Brahman dazzles their eyes and their minds, and they can't conceive of anything beyond that impersonal. So therefore this argument is, the first argument, that because the Absolute Truth is a source of everything, and in that everything we see form and formlessness, therefore the Supreme Absolute Truth must have both form as well as formlessness. And in the ultimate analysis, the form is superior to the formless because the person is superior to the impersonal aspect that we have seen by a few examples. So this is one argument or one logic by which we can understand this. Some of our devotees were saying they have relatives who have Mayavadi, so here are some arguments you can give them. Of course, ultimately, arguments don't work many times. But it's just some logic you can present nicely without getting into the boxing ring. Just very nicely you can sit and discuss. And there's also a second and very important point for us to accept, that the Lord indeed can have a spiritual form, and that's not something contradictory. Because the argument, as I mentioned earlier, put forward by the Mayavadis is that God is unlimited, and to give Him a form means to limit Him. So Srila Prabhupada gives a very simple argument and says that to say that God can't have a form is to limit Him. You get this point? That means you're limiting God. You're saying that God can't have something. How is it that God can't have something? There's nothing that God can't have or can't do. So He must have a form. To say that He can't have a form is to limit Him, rather than to say that He has a form and that would be limiting Him. So let's expand this a little more. What is it that limits, actually? Is it form that limits? No. Why do we say that form is limited? Because that is our experience in this world. Our body is limited. Every object that we see which has a form is limited. Therefore we assume that all form is material. Because every form that we see with our eyes is material. And material forms are limited. Therefore we think that every form must be material and therefore limited. We don't realize that there could be some form which is not material, which is spiritual. Secondly, yes, there are. What about material things which are formless? Can material things be also formless? Like air. Now, material form is limited, for sure. That's clear, easy to understand. As you say here, a no-brainer. What about materially formless things? Are they limited or unlimited? Is the air limited or unlimited? How many say limited? Raise your hand. Okay, don't feel shy. Well, you have to know, make one or the other answer. You can't be on the fence, okay? So clearly raise your hand. How many say that air is limited? Decide quickly. Don't look at the others when you raise your hand. Okay. How many say the air is unlimited? Okay. All right. So I plumped for the first one. Air is limited. Even though it's very vast, it's limited. Why? Just can't measure it. And we understand from Srimad Bhagavatam that the universe is limited. Even though it's very vast, from our point of view, it's immeasurable. Our scientists have been trying to measure and measure and measure, but they can't. The material universe may be very massive, enormous from the point of view of our limited understanding and ability. But still it's limited. We can understand there are innumerable universes that are like little eggs. Therefore the Sanskrit word for universe is Brahmanda. Anda. The word anda means egg. So it's egg-shaped. All the universes are egg-shaped. They're massive eggs from our point of view. But from Mahavishnu's point of view, they're very tiny. And they emanate from the pores of his skin and then move outwards and expand and become bigger and bigger. So the universes are limited. Every universe has coverings. The Bhagavatam says different types of coverings, one after the other. And all the universes put together as well are limited. They just occupy one corner of the spiritual sky. So even though for us it seems vast and immeasurable, actually it's limited. Just like the ocean. You step out onto the ocean, or you take a boat and go into the middle of the ocean, and you see just water and water everywhere for miles and miles together. Till the horizon, you can see just water and water if you're in the middle of an ocean. So you may think it's endless. There's no limit to it. But of course, from a knowledge of geography, from another point of view, we can understand that even though the ocean is very vast, it is still limited. It is vast from our point of view, but it's still limited. Similarly, the air is also limited. What to speak of the universe? Even modern scientists will tell us that when you rise in an aeroplane beyond a certain height, there's no air there. Therefore, even at 35,000 feet or 40,000 feet as you're flying in an airplane, you have a pressurized cabin. And sometimes when the cabin gets depressurized due to some technical problem, then they have these oxygen masks that fall down. Yes, we all have to hear these instructions when we travel. You have to place the oxygen mask because at that level, the atmosphere is very rarefied. In other words, the oxygen is very low, the air is very thin. What to speak of 40,000 feet? Even mountaineers who travel to high peaks like the Himalayas, the Everest, they have to carry oxygen with them. Because the air gets so thin, you can barely breathe. So we are not talking even about the scale of the universe. We are talking just of this one tiny planet. The air extends only for maybe a few hundred kilometers, maybe a few thousand kilometers at the most. It gets rarefied as you go further and further away from the earth. So it's limited. This is common sense understanding, isn't it? So even the air is limited, and air is formless. So now I come to the important point, that all material things, whether form having a form or not having a form, are limited. Material forms are limited, and anything material that is formless is also limited. So what is it that limits? Is it form that limits? It's matter that limits. Anything material is limited. That's the point, the crux of the matter. And what about spiritual? Everything spiritual is unlimited. Whether the spiritual thing has a form or whether it's formless, both are unlimited. Please see this important point. So when we say that God has a form, we say He has a spiritual form. And because it's spirit, it's unlimited. So even Krishna's form is unlimited. The formless aspect of Krishna, the Brahman, is also unlimited, undoubtedly. But even Krishna's form is limited because it's spirit. So the matter, whether having a form or whether being formless, is limited. Spirit, having a form or not having a form, is unlimited. Are you getting this logic? So everything that is spirit is unlimited, everything that is matter is limited. So our experience of form is only with material forms. Therefore we think that Krishna's form must also be material. But actually Krishna's form is spiritual. So now the next question. How can Krishna's form be unlimited? It's a form, it's just a form with two hands. And that's why Brahma is asking this question, because he thinks it's mundane, because it's appeared within this world. He has two forms, two hands, two eyes, two ears. So how can we say that this form is limited, unlimited? Yes.
Because he is the source of everything, he is the source of the energies for emanating from him. Because he is fully under the control of the energies, that's why he is unlimited.
He is the source of everything, therefore he is unlimited? Yes, but can you give some practical examples to show how the form of Krishna is unlimited? Yes. Yes?
Because we can do, we know from the scriptures that Krishna's activities are not limited to his senses, like he can eat even with his eyes.
Okay, that's just, he can do some miracles. Your argument is that because he can do the activities of one sense with another sense, he can eat with his eyes, so therefore it's unlimited. But it just shows that he can do some, his eyes are fantastic. But does it show that his form is unlimited? Yes.
He can be at many places at one point.
Yes, very good. How can he be at many places at the same time? Yes? Sorry?
That's what was mentioned in the scripture, that he was with 10,000 wives at one point.
Yes, because that one Krishna, that one form, can expand himself into innumerable forms and be present simultaneously at different places. Can we do that? We can't. Even the yogis can expand themselves at the most into 8 forms or 9 forms, as Saupari Muni did, as Kardama Muni did. But Krishna can expand himself into not just 16,108 forms, as he did in Dwarka, to be with each of his queens, or into thousands of Krishnas who danced with the gopis in the Rasalila at Vrindavan, but he can expand himself into unlimited forms. Yesterday in the Bhagavatam class, we were discussing how Krishna is present in every atom. And how many atoms exist in the universe? Unlimited. And how many universes? Unlimited. So Krishna is in our heart as a super soul. He has expanded himself. He is also present in every atom. So Krishna has expanded that one form unlimitedly into so many identical forms. Of course, there's a slight difference between his expansions in the Rasa Leela and between his expansions who are present as a super soul in the heart and the atom. But nevertheless, that's Krishna expanding his one form. And then that form expands again. His one form expands into another form, that other form expands into many other forms, each of those expand into other forms. Inconceivable. So this is Krishna's unlimited form. So one reason we can say Krishna's form is unlimited is because he can expand that one form into unlimited number of forms, each equal to the original form. Even the avatars, the expansions of the Lord. Brahma gives the example of the candles, right? One candle lighting the other candles. And the original candle is Krishna. So this is one argument we can give to understand that Krishna's form is unlimited. Because he can expand into unlimited forms. Give me another reason to believe that Krishna's form is unlimited. Yes. Yes, but that doesn't explain why the form is unlimited. Yes. Krishna showed his universal form. That's a material form, no? The universal form is material. He carried Govardhan, but he's just so powerful, he can do that. How is his form unlimited? We saw one reason why his form is unlimited. I want a second reason. Yes. What about Matsya Avatar? Well, he just expands himself to become Matsya Avatar. Yes. Yes, that's the point he was making. Universal form is material. Yes. Brahma Vimohana Leela, he expands himself. That is the first point we have made, that he expands himself into unlimited other forms. That's already covered, yes. Yeah, even after expanding to many, many original expansions, the original form remains the same. Yes, that's still part of the first point. Another way to understand Krishna's form is unlimited is to see that he can expand or contract that one form unlimitedly. Krishna has a medium height. He is neither too tall nor too short. But how big is the Lord in the atom? Angushtamatrena, in the heart, he says angushtama, he's like the size of your thumb. And in the atom, he is even tinier, very tiny. He's within the atom. What are the dimensions of an atom? Very small. So Krishna reduces his size to be within an atom. And what about Mahavishnu? How big is he? He's so massive that we cannot imagine. In fact, from the pores of his skin, the universes emanate. And this one universe is so huge that we can't fathom with our best of instruments its limits. And so the size of the universe is just equal to the width of the pores of the skin of Mahavishnu. How big is the pores on our skin? How big are they? How wide are they? In relation to our height or size. So can you begin to imagine how big Mahavishnu is? Actually, we can't. It's just beyond our imagination. So, a second way to understand how Krishna's form, spiritual form, is unlimited is to know that he can expand and contract his forms to any size that he wishes. Therefore, he's unlimited. So therefore, we can understand that to say that the Absolute Truth has a form is not to limit him. We are not limiting God when we say that he has a form. But because we say he has a spiritual form, that makes all the difference. Everything material is limited, whether it has a form or whether it doesn't have a form. Everything spiritual is unlimited, whether it has a form or doesn't have a form. So therefore, form and unlimitedness are not necessarily mutually incompatible. They are incompatible only when it's matter. But when it's spirit, then they are perfectly compatible. You can have spiritual identity which is unlimited. So therefore, these are some arguments which we can understand for believing that the Absolute Truth is actually a supreme transcendental person. And when he descends into this world, he does so in his own original form, as Krishna declares in the Bhagavad Gita. Also, in the next verse here, we see that Krishna has many, many energies, unlimited energies. So Brahma says, you manifest different energies for annihilation, for generation, for acceptance and maintenance by combination and permutation. These unlimited energies are forever at the beck and call of Krishna. In fact, a good servant understands the mind of the master so well that the servant does things that the master may want even without the master having expressed it verbally or indicated in any way. That is what a good servant is. So the energies of the Lord are like that. They understand the Lord's heart, they understand the Lord's desire so well that they're ever ready to serve him in different ways. Parasya shakti vividhaiva shruyate svabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. So the Upanishads say that the Lord has many, many shaktis or energies, and these are ever ready to serve the Lord in whichever way the Lord wants. And in order to employ the Lord's energies, he doesn't have to struggle. He just desires and it's done. Let there be light, and there was light. But if I say, let there be light, there's not going to be light. I have to spend money, I have to buy a bulb, I have to place the bulb, I have to ensure there's electric connection there. There's so many things I have to do. We sometimes wish our life could be like that. Let there be dollars. And dollars don't come like that. We have to work hard for those dollars. So, but Krishna wishes, let there be something, let there be creation, and the creation happens. Svabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha, simply by his desire, automatically things happen. He doesn't need to work. He doesn't need to make a big plan. All the plan making and everything is done by his agents. So Krishna has unlimited agents or energies who do his bidding. And they interact with each other harmoniously. They work in permutations and combinations to fulfill the Lord's innumerable desires. Yes, the Lord has desires too. But they are transcendental desires. If we have desires, how can the Lord not have desires? So the Lord has many, many desires. But they are all spiritual desires. And our duty, the perfection of our life, is to be able to try to assist the Lord in fulfilling his desires. Not that we alone can do anything, because the Lord is so great and we are so tiny. But our very effort in trying to give the Lord pleasure to fulfill his desires is very satisfying to the Lord. And then he blesses us with his mercy. And then we revive that wonderful relationship of love that we have with him. So the Supreme Lord is, broadly speaking, two types of energies. That one energy he has ultimately can be classified into two parts, spiritual and material. The material energies material energy operates within this universe, and beyond that, the spiritual energies operate. Of course, the spiritual energy, being source of the material energy, can also operate within the universe, material universe. When someone subjects himself or herself to the service of Krishna unlimitedly, surrenders completely, then he or she comes under the jurisdiction of the spiritual energy, not the material energy. For example, when the Lord appeared before Dhruva Maharaj and blessed him by touching his forehead with his conch shell, Dhruva, who was only 5 years old at that time, began to speak wonderful prayers in glorification of the Lord. And such prayers are not possible, not just for a 5-year-old child, but even for an adult, unless he is empowered by the spiritual energy. So Srila Prabhupada in his purport mentions there that such prayers have to be empowered by the empowered by the spiritual energy of the Lord. No intelligent poet or someone can concoct such prayers. It's not possible. So the spiritual energy, being superior to the material energy, can operate as it chooses in the material realm. But the material energy cannot operate in the spiritual realm, because the material energy is inferior. The material energy has no access into the spiritual realm, in the spiritual world. So the Lord is all pervasive even here. We have seen that he has a form that resides in Goloka Vrindavan. That's called the transcendental aspect of Krishna. And then there is what we call the immanent aspect, immanent, immanent. The Lord, when he manifests himself within this world, within the universe, like he does as the Paramatma, the Supersoul, or he even manifests himself as the deity within material elements and becomes identical with the deity, these are the immanent forms. Now, here we are told about how the energies are one with the Lord. Yes, even the material energy is one with the Lord in the sense that the energy and the energetic are one. So therefore, we can say that nothing is independent of God. Srila Prabhupada mentions this here. The whole manifestation, by manifestation we mean the material manifestation. The whole manifestation is the Lord himself by diffusion of his different energies only. Namely, the internal, external and marginal. Just as sunlight is a manifestation of the energy of the sun planet. So therefore, nothing is outside of God. Nothing is independent of God. Everything originates from the Lord and is therefore connected to the Lord. So therefore, we can safely say that God is everything. But yet, everything is not God. That's an important point. God is everything because everything emanates from Him. But everything is not God. Meaning, I can't go to any stone on the street and say, this is God, and start place Him on the altar and start worshipping Him. Or I can't take the microphone and say, well, this is also. Since God is everything, the microphone is God, so I'll place the microphone on the altar and worship it. No. The microphone is the energy of God. So when we say God is everything, we mean that He's everything by means of His energy. But everything is not God. Meaning that God is a transcendental supreme personality. He resides ever in His eternal abode, Goloka Vrindavan. So by using His energies in His service, gradually we will get access to that transcendental realm and be able to associate with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan very personally. And that is the perfection of our life. Thank you very much. We'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Bhakta Prabhu. Yes. Powerful.
Can you explain a little bit how we can take them that step further to actually remove them from this concept that they are God and to give them something greater, that they are actually, that being a servant of God is greater than that philosophy?
Okay, so Bhakta Prabhu has asked the question that the Mayavadi's understanding of the absolute truth as being formless ultimately is one aspect of the Mayavad philosophy. There is another aspect that they believe themselves to be the absolute truth. And that can also be a very enticing belief and a very powerful experience when they want to get attracted to the dazzling effulgence, the Brahman or the Brahma Jyoti. So how does one counter that argument or that belief? Yes, you see, when we say that we are God, we can understand it in the sense that the molecule of the sunshine or the atom of the sunshine says, I am the sun. Yes, one in quality. Inasmuch as the drop of water is one with the ocean, qualitatively but not quantitatively. So the little element, the soul, is spiritual, Satchidananda. So is Krishna. So is that impersonal effulgence. So we are all one in quality. So to say that I am Brahma, aham Brahmasmi, that is true. The Mayavadis say this to explain that I am the Supreme Lord. They say aham Brahmasmi. Aham means I, Brahma means the absolute, the spiritual, Asmi means am. So aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit. But the word Brahma means spirit, not necessarily in all contexts, only the Supreme Spirit. Had we been the Supreme, that phrase would have been aham para Brahmasmi. Para is Supreme. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna glorifies Krishna as Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan. He says, you are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Abode, the Supreme Refuge and Shelter. So yes, when the Mayavadis say that we are Brahman, we agree with that. We are spiritual entities, we are spirit, but we are not Supreme Spirit. We are part and parcel spirit. We are tiny, insignificant spirit. 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair, spirit. So that's one point, that nowhere in the scripture does it say that we are quantitatively equal to the Supreme Lord. So we are just part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Another thing, of course, also is that how did we get here? If we are God, how did we come under the clutches of Maya? That means that God came under the clutches of Maya. If God came under the control of Maya, it means Maya is stronger than God, which means Maya is God. In any case, then I'm not God. Then Maya is God. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly explains that the material energy is always under his control. So how can we be controlled by the material energy now? What they argue is that we are the absolute truth, the supreme, and somehow or other, now that's that big somehow or other, we came into this material world and we have fallen into Maya. Now, once you realize that you are the absolute, that you become free from Maya. But why did you come here in the first place? That is the question. How is it that you being the supreme could come under the clutches of a lower energy? Yes. So the response to that is that's a leela. Now, leela leads to bliss, not suffering. When Krishna does leela, it increases transcendental bliss. But when we do our leelas, then they lead to suffering. So that's an argument we can give them. We can tell them that to say that everything you do is leela is not correct, because every action you do is under the jurisdiction of the law of karma, the law of material nature. So if I say it's my leela to drive the car in any way I like, but the policeman is not going to be, not going to agree with that. He'll have his own leela to do. And there's this little joke about this one Mayavadi who used to always preach to the other person who was a devotee that this is all illusion. So therefore, because it's illusion, it's all, you should be fearless. So then one time the two friends were walking and a mad elephant came along. And they both started running for their life. The elephant was chasing them. So the devotee was running, the Mayavadi was running. And he asked the Mayavadi, well, everything is illusion, so why are you afraid? Why are you running away? He said, well, even this running away is illusion. So like that, they say everything is Maya. Everything is leela. If everything is leela, but that leela should lead you to bliss, number one, not repeated birth and death, not suffering. If it's a leela, why do I go to the dentist when I'm in pain? If it's a leela, why don't things happen the way I like? In Krishna's leela, everything happens the way he likes. It's a huge transcendental drama enacted by the Lord, according to his plans. But in the material world, things don't happen according to our plans. Sometimes they may, but mostly they don't. So therefore, because our activities don't result in bliss, we don't call them leela. Number two, because these activities are under the in the domain or under the jurisdiction of the laws of nature like karma and so on, therefore we can't say they are leela. Leela pertains only to those activities that are on the transcendental platform, not on the material platform. So in this way we could try to present logical arguments and understand. Ultimately, of course, it's hard, you see, because however much logic we may try to present, the matter of faith and inclination towards a particular belief comes from a previous life as well. And that can be very strong, very strong. So even though the person may be intellectually convinced, but his or her heart may not accept. Because there's just a natural attraction towards a particular, way of thinking. That person probably has what we call the jnanonmukhi sukriti. those credits that drive that person to become attracted to the Jnana Marga, the Jnana Yoga, the path of impersonal realization, because there was something done in the previous lives in that connection that has accumulated now. Similarly, some people have a natural inclination towards devotion because of bhakti-onmukhi sukriti. They have done some pious credits in the previous lives in devotional service. Therefore, they are automatically attracted towards Krishna consciousness. So this is a continuum. It's a continuation. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport that no one can come to Krishna consciousness in this life without having had some connection with it in the previous lives. And the same applies for the Mayavadis too. That no one can be a staunch Mayavadi in this life unless he has had some connection with it in the previous life. So that tendency carries forward. And many times it overrides logic, because it's very strong. That faith in Mayavad is also given by Krishna in the heart, because that living entity desires it. Inasmuch as the faith of an atheist in atheism is also given by Krishna, because that person desires to be an atheist. So similarly, the faith of a devotee is also given by Krishna. So the question may arise, and why are we talking of all these arguments and the logic and everything? Number one, because maybe our faith isn't that strong. Maybe we have also other influences, karmonmukhi sukriti, that the various philosophies are competing in our mind for attention, and we sometimes have a doubt, is it this, is it that? So to strengthen our faith, to strengthen our convictions, to clarify our understanding, this sort of discussion is also very helpful. And it's also helpful to clear the clouds in our mind so that we can convince others, or at least present these arguments logically to others, so they understand that what we are doing makes sense. Krishna consciousness is not something illogical and irrational. Although it's a matter of the heart, but it's based on a very strong philosophical foundation. So then we understand this. So it's necessary sometimes to have this knowledge so that it can bolster our faith. Yes?
We can also stimulate that sukriti by providing, say, we can't argue with that person, but by providing some prasadam, association, different various ways in which we can actually establish a friendship, that then established may not be in this lifetime, but then in the next lifetime they then can develop the Roshan.
Absolutely, that's a good point. That there are some people who may be staunch in their particular beliefs, and they may not be willing to turn to Krishna consciousness, but we can at least establish the sukriti, the pious credits, devotional credits, by giving them some prasadam, by making them hear the sound of the holy names, or just by being friends with them and getting them to appreciate and like the devotees of the Lord. So that appreciation or liking of the devotees is their first step in Krishna consciousness. This is called ajñāta sukriti, unknowingly acquired devotional pious credits, which will accumulate, and perhaps after a few lifetimes, that person may become a devotee. It's going to be hard because the other sukritis may also be very strong. Or dushkritis, the bad influences, may be strong. But you never know. One day this person may become a devotee. So in our minds too, we have these competing philosophies and desires. So by practicing devotional service, then eventually we hope and pray that our devotional side will triumph over the other philosophies that we have and desires that we have in our heart. So yes, a very important part of our preaching program is also to give this sukriti to others. We never know when it will click and when he will become a devotee. But these Sukritis can be very strong, or Dushkritis, whichever. I know one devotee I met, I relate this incident often. This was in the 90s, early 90s I met him. He said that, "I've been chanting 16 rounds every day, following the four regulative principles. I read Prabhupada's books every day. He gives nice classes. At that time also, he was giving very nice classes and everything." He says, "I've been a devotee for 25 years, or 20 years, something like 25 years. He said, 20 years. He said, "Even after all this, sometimes I get a very serious doubt that causes me a great disturbance. How can God be a person?" He said, "Because before I came to Krishna consciousness, I was associating with the Mayavadi organization." And he says, "Sometimes this torments me. Even though I've been in Krishna consciousness for 20 odd years, I've been doing everything that we're supposed to do. But this haunts me once in a while. How can God be a person? God must be impersonal. I know the arguments. I know the philosophy. But it troubles me." That's the power of Sukriti, of the samskaras that we have. So therefore, to give people the devotional samskaras will be very strong, because someday these things will grow and accumulate and one day fructify in the form of a devotional inclination, and the person will become a devotee. Right? Okay, one last, yes.
You were mentioning that the material world is manifold in size, and the spiritual world is threefold in size. You also mentioned how Krishna's form is not limited, it can expand. So in the spiritual world, does Krishna expand to reciprocate with this, because the size is threefold, so there are so many living entities in the spiritual world and then in Goloka, and does he expand himself to reciprocate with the different rasas and with the different moods that the devotees have, or is the same Krishna and the devotees experience their having that rasa?
The question is, in Goloka Vrindavan also, does Krishna expand himself to be with everybody, or in the spiritual world? Definitely, because in the spiritual world also there are unlimited planets, spiritual planets. The capital planet, so to speak, is Krishna Loka. But apart from Krishna Loka, there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets, where there is a presiding deity who is a form of Lord Narayan, who is a four-armed expansion of Krishna. And he presides and has loving dealings with his devotees. And in Krishna Loka, he is present. Krishna Loka has three divisions, Mahaprabhu says. There's Vrindavan, there is Mathura, and there is Dwarka. And also there's another, you can call it an appendix, that's Ayodhya, also at one place. So the Lord is present even in Krishna Loka in these different forms. So therefore the expansiveness, or the nature of the Lord to expand himself, is definitely very much there in Krishna Loka, in the spiritual world as well. Whatever is necessary to facilitate the loving dealings with his devotees, that the Lord does. If it means he has to expand himself, then he does that. Like he did in the Rasa Leela. So when the cowherd boys were sitting and having prasadam with Krishna, and they all felt that Krishna was looking at them, is it that Krishna expanded himself and therefore the cowherd boys felt like that? Or is it just some mystic trick by which they felt? Both. Be both. Krishna can do both the things simultaneously. Because Krishna is the center of everyone's existence in Krishna Loka. Alright, so it's quite late now. Yes, one last final question, we'll conclude.
You said that
I'm always afraid of one last question. When is prasadam time? Yes.
limited material worlds, but I mean universes. Are they all material? All the universes?
The question is, are all the universes material? The answer is, within the material creation, all the universes are material. And beyond the material creation is the spiritual world, where there are unlimited planets, each of which is spiritual. Right? Do you want to go there? Yes. So you have to start chanting then. Right? Okay. All right, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Gaur.